Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am going to be with you for about 55 minutes or so today. Kind of an exciting show today. Actually, a very historical show. And I am honored and pleased to have with me my guest. And he's from, James is, and I have him introduce himself. He's from the Susan B. Anthony Museum. And honestly, a place I've always wanted to get to, just never have, but I will after this. Stay with us. It's going to be an informative show. They have a lot going on. And more so now, I this is just me. And of course, everybody knows the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the city council, and or anybody who's out on this beautiful morning for a walk. But we got really have to get back to learning about our history and the historical figures. And Susan B. Anthony is one of those figures. And I say that not as a downgrade to anybody, but with a lot that's going on out there in the world today, we need to know our own history. So without further ado, foie gras, soup du jour. James, introduce yourself and tell us your title and all that you do.
Sure. Yes. Thanks for having me on, Bill. I'm James Capuzzi, director of the Susan B. Anthony Birthplace Museum in Adams, Massachusetts, and very happy to be here to speak about Susan B. Anthony and other women who fought for the right to vote back starting as early as 1850 and finally concluding in 1919 and 1920. So only really a little bit over 100 years ago were certain women granted the right to vote and other freedoms were kind of fought for throughout the remaining years in between then and now. But yeah, very, very excited to be here talking about Susan, talking about some of the work that she did, and then also kind of the next wave of women that finished the fight when she had passed away. One kind of quick thing, what you said about always wanting to visit the museum but never getting to is probably the thing that I hear the most having been here in this position. Been here about a year, and that's pretty much the response from everybody. Wow, that sounds great. I didn't know you were there. Or, oh, that's a great place. I drive by it once a week, twice a week, three times a week, but I never have gotten a chance to come in. So we're always happy to welcome folks. We're open 10 to 4, Thursday to Monday. To learn more about Susan.
And you know what's really good about that, too, is it's local history. You know, I have a son that lives in Scarsdale, New York. So we take the Taconic Parkway. Yep. And I keep saying I'm going to go back to the Roosevelt, Frank FDR. I mean, I went there and we probably spent 4 hours. It was an amazing place. And I want to get back. And I will promise you this. And I'll let you know when I'm there because sometimes people throw me out of places, but no big deal. I will get up there. I mean, I'm going to put it on my list. It's an important thing, and I'd like to know more about her. I remember what I learned about her in high school, but that was a few years after she died, so that's old.
I mean, not that soon after, thankfully. But I mean, I think that the thing that we offer and what is unique from kind of other museums about women's suffrage, whether that's the Seneca Falls National Park over there or the Susan B. Anthony House in Rochester, is that we tied together her whole life. So she was born in Adams in 1820. The house that I'm sitting in right now, I'm on the second floor in my office. Down below me is where she lived and played and ate and worked for about 6.5 years. Yeah. So the ground floor restored back to 1817 when the house was built. Her dad's family, they were farmers. There's a farm behind us on Walling Road here in Adams that still calls themselves the Susan B. Anthony Farm. And there's a lot of local kind of history there. And it also ties into the a mill history of the area too, because Susan's dad ran a successful cotton mill on a Tophet Brook down the way, and it was so successful that he got poached and kind of taken to Bentonville, New York to run a bigger mill. So that's part of Susan's background too, is not only, you know, having the education that a lot of boys wouldn't have had being raised
Right.
Quaker, she also was experiencing working children. These mill girls would work on her dad's mill. Up to 10 of them lived in the attic right above me. And I can
Wow.
say that, as most people know, unfinished attic, blazing hot in the summer and
Yeah.
ice cold in the winter.
Oh,
So
great. Yeah.
I'm sure Susan was able to learn a fair bit about kind of workers' rights or lack thereof with some of the child laborers or child workers on her own dad's mill. So another kind of bit of color for her early childhood and early background.
Isn't it amazing when you think back on those days? Like, I don't even think kids could imagine, kiddos today could imagine what it must have been like to not have heat in the, even in your bedroom. In the second floor, there probably wasn't heat up there either. And people grew up like that. And to me, all of these things, I in an earlier interview, I had State Representative Smitty Pignatelli, who's retiring, and it's very interesting when you look at the history and of all of these people and how they came about. I never knew that about her dad. Thank you. Of course, if I did, I probably forgot because I don't remember where I parked the car. So. But all kidding aside, there's so much history in this part of the country. And you don't have to go far.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we try to kind of help people connect to and help people realize is that especially for people that live here, whether you're living in North Adams, Pittsfield, some of these whether it's Hancock, some of these towns, Cheshire and such, people are not generally thinking of places to go visit or to kind of thinking like a lot of tourists think, like when they come to an area, they're, oh, let me get my list of museums, let me get my list of kind of like lakes and other kind of hot spots for visiting. They're kind of more caught up in their day to day. So we try to kind of help punch through with some interesting local history. And it's great to have such a direct connection to one of the most important women in American history, maybe one of the most important people in American history in terms of the fight for women's rights. And so it's a great thing to remind people. Yes, Susan B. Anthony was born in Adams, and there are certain factors of her life here that had an impact on who she would become later. So her Quaker upbringing really was the main part of that. Quakers, and there still are Quakers now, but Quakers then were kind of more progressive with regards to men and women's equality. So women could attend meetings. Children, boys and girls would go to school together. There's a story about Susan wanting to do long division, and her teacher said, "No, girls don't need to learn long division." And Susan told her dad, and he pulled her out of that school and put her into a school where she could learn long division. So that's, and I'm not a big math guy myself. I couldn't imagine fighting to be able to do moderately difficult math. But for a lot of children that do visit the museum, that's an impactful story. The idea that, oh, you wouldn't learn the same thing as your boy classmate sitting next to you, and you'd have to fight to be able to, do 6 into 72 or something like that. So it's another kind of highlight for just how kind of far we've come, I guess, in education to where it's not thought of as there's a boy's learning and a girl's learning. And I think Susan was not that she, and she was later also a school teacher. We can get into that too, but that was definitely impactful when she was a child.
When you think about what you just said, there were the Shakers, and then there were the Quakers.
That's
Now,
right.
Shakers were opposite. They were big division between male and female and workload and education and the mother, the housewife, that was their ethos. And I but you know you breaking news here, not really, most people I never realized Susan B. Anthony was a Quaker.
So she was raised
Relaxing.
as a Quaker, and her dad was Quaker, her mother was Baptist, and him marrying a Baptist was scandalous for the Quaker
Oh.
society at the time. It was uncommon to marry outside the meeting.
Oh,
They
yeah.
basically had to elope. And when they came back, in order for them to be reaccepted into Quaker society, Susan's mother had to disavow her quote unquote worldly ways of singing, dancing, wearing patterned
Oh.
clothing. And there's a somewhat it's anecdotal, apocryphal story about Susan's mom dancing and singing the night before her wedding, and kind of her last chance to do so. And that she might have also hummed as kind of a loophole. She might have hummed to her children.
Oh.
But there was a certain, I mean, there's a certain simplicity to the Quaker life that is interesting to people now, because it seems like it could be viewed as, at odds with their progressive stances on abolition, on women's rights. But then they also have these somewhat interesting kind of quirks with women's clothing being, very reserved. The black dress that Susan wore was in homage to her mother, and things like that. So, yeah, it's a kind of an interesting set of principles, I guess, that she would have had growing up. Yeah.
I did know the Quakers were very influential in the anti-slavery movement and abolition and all that. But I never knew that about Susan Anthony too. There's a wealth of knowledge that we all need to know because as we know now, the world's kind of in a kerfuffle. And a lot of it is, I think, this is just me, a lot of it is we don't understand our history, and I don't know why that is, but I would just say we have an opportunity to go to the Susan B. Anthony. It's not that far. I mean, I used to live in Tucson. We drive 45 minutes to spend an hour with our friends. You drive 45 minutes in Pittsfield, you're in Vermont,
Yep, that's right.
So, I
That's right.
mean, Susan B., we'll give you the address. We'll give you the times. Don't go. This is a morning show, James. And so people are in and out. So sometimes we repeat stuff. But we'll get you all the information about when you can visit. And the other thing is bring your kids. Bring your kids. I mean, not if they're 2 years old, but and you probably could if they're well
Yeah,
behaved.
even if they are, even if they are.
Yeah, because to get them into that going to museums, I can remember my very vaguely or not very seriously remember my first trip to the Berkshire Museum with my mother, and it was amazing.
And right now it's a good time to visit as a family, to visit with children. We have library passes at most libraries in the county, the Williamstown Library, Adams Library, Pittsfield, the Berkshire Athenaeum, a few other libraries as well. So it's a way to get to two adults and two children in for free. You just check it out like you would check out a book, and then head on over. And we have a new children's exhibit that talks about uses children's chairs as a vehicle to talk about the types of things that children of that time period would do, whether it's working on the farm, working in the mill, sewing, doing math problems or arithmetic, as they would call it. And we have a story and a scavenger hunt and prizes as well for kids that can complete the scavenger hunt during their time in the museum. So it's a uniquely good time to come as a family. It's always a good time to come as an adult, but to come with children, even younger children, it's a good time to do so, especially with it being an election year. Voting is on the mind. If you need to convince anybody about the benefits of voting and the need to be civically engaged, this is a good place to start that conversation.
That's an excellent, excellent point. That is an excellent point. And interestingly enough, it was part of our topic with Representative Pignatelli was pretty much what you're saying, be involved, vote. And I can't believe the number of people that I have spoken with over the past, say, 3 weeks that aren't even going to vote. To me, that's you go. There's a lot of things on a ballot other than the presidential election. So just
that's right. Yep.
If you don't want to vote for that, leave it blank. That also is a vote. If you don't know, if you vote, your ballot goes in and it's a blank. That's you aren't happy with either one. So,
correct.
So Susan B. Anthony was here till she was six, and then what?
Yeah. So after kind of around that time period was when her dad, who was a successful mill owner, was essentially kind of solicited or recruited really to run a bigger mill in Bentonville, New York. And they were there for a few years. And then there was not the Great Depression, but it's a similar economic downturn, collapse, and the family went bankrupt entirely. And they ended up in Rochester, which is where Susan B. Anthony is more known as kind of having her home base as an adult.
Right.
And so during this period, really the bankruptcy and some of the effects of that had a great, really impact on Susan's trajectory, because for one, she was attending a seminary college, which was really unheard of for women in that time period. She had to drop out of that to come back home and help with the situation. She was had experienced really firsthand what little property rights women had, wives had in America, because all of her mother's property was technically her dad's property. And so when they went bankrupt, her mom had to sell everything, including kind of heirloom jewelry, you know, hand-me-down prized inheritance collections. And some family members bought them and gave them back, but a lot of those items disappeared really and were lost. And so she could kind of see the unfairness of that situation. And once they were in Rochester, she began work as a school teacher, and she experienced another kind of form of injustice where she realized she was being paid a quarter or a fifth of what male teachers were being paid at the school for doing the same work. And obviously that's still an issue now. I think women are up to 70% of what men pay for the same work now. So better than 25%, but not that much better. And it's been over 150 years. So that was really kind of a first kind of impetus for Susan. And really she got her start in activism in the temperance movement. So she went to a male temperance meeting, and she was told that she could attend but not speak. And that's a theme in Susan's life, is attending things that she wasn't allowed to speak at. She didn't like that very much. And so she left that group and had formed her own group, Daughters of Temperance. And so kind of that whole movement was really her introduction into women's suffrage. One last thing, and I'll
oh,
stop
no.
this monologue, but
I'm just
there's
absorbing.
We like to think at the museum, we like to think about history in terms of relationships. And I think that there's an important, we think about friendships that we have now, we think about friendships that are important now, and that there are also friendships that were very important then. And one of the most important friendships for women's suffrage was that between Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. The two were introduced by Amelia Bloomer, who's where we get the name Bloomers for kind of short skirts and pants worn underneath. She didn't invent them, but she popularized them. And then she introduced Elizabeth, who was a big proponent for temperance and women's suffrage, to Susan B. Anthony. And their friendship was really the driving force for this first wave of the fight for women's suffrage. Elizabeth Cady Stanton had seven children, was mostly at home. She would write, but she would speech write and write other things. And Susan, who was unmarried, would travel all over the United States reading these speeches. And so that friendship kind of really first started with temperance and then moved into abolition and also into women's suffrage. So,
where do you think she got the chutzpah to do what she did, from her mom or her dad or both?
I think you could really say both. I mean, we know that she was a remarkably intelligent child. She was reading by the age of three. We have that from time spent with her grandmother. And it's likely a combination. I mean, her dad was certainly a black sheep of the Quakers and not a rule follower in that sense by marrying a Baptist, but her mom was the same in marrying a Quaker and kind of fitting into that kind of new lifestyle. And so I think maybe it leans a little bit more towards her dad, but certainly the experiences of her mom helped kind of galvanize Susan to fight for women's rights specifically, and likely experiences that of workers that Susan would have encountered at the mill, who experienced, whether they were children or women working at the mill, they had experienced spousal abuse and other kind of forms of abuse at the hands of alcoholic husbands, which was really the impetus for Temperance originally. Now we kind of think about, the Prohibition Amendment. It has a, it's joked about a little bit. Oh yeah, we tried this kind of crazy thing, and then we got speakeasies, and there's events, and we lean into that. We did a Prohibition trivia night with Pinebrook Pub and Adams, and it was a good kind of combination of history and fun. But temperance then was, it was a really big issue. There was childhood alcoholism. The author Jack London, who wrote Call of the Wild and other books, he had his first drink at 5 years old when he was bringing his dad a beer bucket and tried some. He became an alcoholic, died young from that. And so it was really kind of plaguing society. And so that's where Susan kind of got her start with activism in this, what she viewed as a noble cause, and would continue with that until abolition and then women's suffrage really took over for her, to the point where she definitely was more in favor of women's suffrage than she was in favor of prohibition. She thought that prohibition would, while potentially helpful, would be viewed as a detriment to letting women vote, because the liquor lobbies and men generally were so afraid of losing access that they wouldn't let women vote, which is kind of an interesting part of that history. But yeah, it's an interesting, definitely an interesting thing for her in her upbringing. I think but it's really the Quaker values and the Quaker roots, I think, were the most influential, which then would have come from her dad.
That you know, you thank you for doing it. You're a wealth of knowledge. I'm glad I have you on because you already taught me more than I knew about Susan B. Anthony, which probably wasn't a lot, but or I probably knew more when I could remember it, but now I don't remember where the refrigerator is. So,
Usually in the kitchen, I hope.
yeah, well, oh, good idea. I'll check there. The historical people that. When you think about, you just mentioned a very important thing. There's always been this background of power brokers, right? The liquor industry, the medical industry, the pharmaceutical, now the pharmaceutical.
Sure.
And even back in Susan B. Anthony's day, when you're trying to get something, you had to think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that really kind of organizations that were behind really tobacco and alcohol were the main, and even companies that just like breweries and places like that out of Germany, places that benefited from the legal sale of alcohol and tobacco, were heavily against prohibition, of course, against the temperance movement, and what they pretty rightly assumed to be kind of the connection between women's suffrage, women getting the right to vote, and some reduction in alcohol consumption. I mean, I think that, and there were some interesting, we did some research on this. There are some interesting workarounds that happened after prohibition passed so that people could still buy alcohol. There was Massachusetts specifically had a law that restricted the sale of alcohol to a crazy high amount, like a like multiple gallons of alcohol would be the only amount that you could purchase, as a way to, so that individuals couldn't purchase it, because who would be able to buy 70 gallons of alcohol? And so what groups would do is they would sell 71 gallons, and then 70 would be sold back. And so both sales legal, but now the individual gets his 1 gallon of alcohol. Other things that people did to kind of work around prohibition, there were it's called a painted pig or striped pig party. And so you'd pay $1, whatever, some amount of money to go see this striped pig, and you would be given free beer while viewing the pig. And after you viewed the pig, you could come back in line and I'd like to see the pig again and pay another fee, get another free beer. So there's ways that people subverted it once they had lost. But all throughout the fight for women's suffrage, you can see, I mean, now we have Facebook, Twitter, X, sorry, Instagram, and others, TikTok, other social media accounts where there's memes and other forms of kind of propaganda put out for or against certain issues. But back then it was the same, except done through postcards or done through posters. And we have at the museum a large collection of these kind of suffrage and temperance era postcards where both pro and anti, basically comics or cartoons, things like that, either against women's suffrage or for women's suffrage, against temperance or for temperance. One of my favorite on the temperance side, it's an illustration of a house and a family, and then an illustration of a liquor barrel. And there's a coin raised above, and it says which. So where do you want your money to go? To the barrel, to the bucket, or to your family? And so I think there's a lot of interesting things there too, just thinking about how these messages were communicated, right? Because there wasn't, you know, there it wasn't the same kind of, I guess, access or kind of general spread of information. Even something like this, like your radio show, this is not, of course, this wouldn't have been possible. So the postcards and things like that was a very popular way of getting the message across. It's interesting.
And I'm old enough to remember when postcards were very common. People sent for a couple reasons. One, they were inexpensive to get. And two, they were inexpensive to send. The ratio, I mean, now when you think, I don't know what it even costs to send a letter today of first class, but when
Yeah, I
I
think it's close to, might be even close to 80 cents for a letter and close to 50 for a postcard. Yes, it's gone up a lot since COVID.
yeah and interestingly enough, as an aside, I've gotten about four postcards over the last week. And I haven't gotten a postcard in years, whether people are, and some of them are, they're not personal. They're like an advertisement kind of thing. And maybe they're just taking a cheaper route. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a that that's definitely a consideration in terms of costs when you're doing these big mailings. I know that certain like the League of Women Voters and other groups locally, they will write postcards to people encouraging them to vote. So that's another kind of method of somewhat personal, but well, actually very personal, but somewhat less expensive, you know, than sending a letter, close to half of the cost. But the interesting thing was in Susan's time, or kind of towards the end of her time, with these suffrage era postcards, people would send them. There are kind of two versions, or at least the ones that we have in the collection from the head of our board of directors. There are two types of postcards. They either send them kind of like a meme, like we would send today, where the writing on the back was, "Hey, is this you, or is this your wife, or is this you I saw out the other day?" And then the other version that would be sent out would have more of a formal purpose, where it was a message saying, "I support women's suffrage." And then on the back, there would be space for four stamps. And you could stamp it, send it to another person, then someone else could stamp it, send it to another person, and you're passing it kind of like
Like a
you know,
chain letter.
chain email. Yeah, chain email,
Yeah,
chain letter, exactly.
cool.
So kind of an earlier version of that. And this would happen for both sides. So that's another thing kind of to remember is, you know, for all of Susan's life and for really even close to a decade after her death, public opinion was very much not in favor of women's suffrage. And so there's a huge number of these postcards to the opposite effect. I'm opposed to women's suffrage, or the common illustration of a wife going out to work or going out to the bar and her husband drowning under the weight of caring for multiple children, the infant in the cradle, the bottle isn't working, he looks bedraggled and kind of distressed. And that was really a concern then. And even if you think about it, kind of the start of the, "Oh, who wears the pants in the family," comes from these bloomers. And there's a lot of postcards to that effect where, hey, you know, this they show a child looking up and he doesn't know who his mom or his dad is because, you know, who's wearing it's silly, but this was a real concern. People really did
Yeah.
care about this.
Well, as
It,
much
it,
as
yeah.
things, as much as things change, a lot of them stay the same.
Right, which is why it's important to remember this the history and to kind of reconnect with some of these arguments and these thoughts because you know it hasn't not been that long. It's been
No.
only 100 years since women's suffrage passed, and that's you know one or two generations. It's not that long. And so I think when people come and realize that there's a kind of wow moment or there's a surprise, maybe a little bit negative, thinking, "Oh wow, it really took us that long to get here."
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very interesting. I think the one of the things that we're doing this year
Let me
is,
have you
yeah, go
break.
ahead.
We got to take a break. Hold that till you come
Yeah.
back. We come back.
Sounds good.
Please stay tuned. I'm learning more. This has been a phenomenal half hour, I got to tell you right now. I've learned so much about Susan B. Anthony and about the era. Because you know what? Think about what James is saying. The names have changed, but a lot of the issues are the same. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial, simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. I'm having a great time. I hope you are.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
What's going on here?
Combining the miracle of modern technology with the secrets of ordinary street junkies. Producing this.
89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union. Proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here. With locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
El condado de los Berkshires se dirige hacia un mañana más brillante y ese futuro comienza contigo. Los Berkshires están al borde de caer en una gran crisis de salud mental debido a la falta de acceso, dejando algunos pacientes, especialmente niños, esperando meses para recibir la atención adecuada. Tú puedes ayudar abogando por ti mismo y por otros para encontrar carreras en la salud mental. Sé un héroe de la salud mental para los Berkshires. Para obtener más información, visita briancenter.org o namibc.org.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Tim's Lawn Care, it's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281 4222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back. I'm telling you, I'm here today, and it's the James Capuzzi. Did I say it right?
That's right. Yep, James Capuzzi, or you could say Capuzzi if you want to be really Italian, but Capuzzi is fine.
Okay, I get in trouble with Smith and Green and Jones. So
yeah, bravo.
James is the administrator?
Director.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
You see what I mean about remembering? James is the director of the Susan B. Anthony in Adams. We have, I'm sitting here overwhelmed with his knowledge and what Susan B. Anthony, her history, her background. She was a Quaker. Her mom was a Southern Baptist, had to convert to, her dad was a Quaker. An amazing background of an amazing lady who really, I think it's pretty fair to say, James, she was a mover and shaker.
Absolutely. Mover and a Quaker.
Mover and a Quaker. Yeah, not a shaker. So she just do a quick recap of what we just talked about for the people that are just tuning in.
This is the Susan B. Anthony Birthplace Museum in Adams, Massachusetts, up on 67 East Road. We've been talking about Susan's childhood, her background with a Quaker dad and Baptist mom, some of the things that might have influenced her on her fight for temperance, her fight for abolition, her fight for women's suffrage, some of her background experiences as a teacher, interacting with the child mill workers and her dad's mill here in Adams, and some of the kind of other factors involved with, you know, fighting for temperance and different groups involved against that fight and against the fight for women's suffrage. If you're interested in learning more about Susan B. Anthony, about her childhood, and the rest of her life, really, the museum is open Thursdays through Mondays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we have library passes at the Williamstown Davis and Mill Library, at the Berkshire Athenaeum in Pittsfield, and at the Adams Free Library in Adams, as well as a few other libraries locally. So if you're at your library and you're checking out a book, checking out a movie, you can check out the museum pass and swing by. That's kind of what we've been discussing. And I think we're going to move maybe a little bit towards the middle or towards the end of her life into suffrage now.
Yeah.
It's always difficult to talk about Susan B. Anthony because she did so many things. She was incredibly prolific, busy advocate for a lot of different causes and issues. I don't want to neglect her fight for abolition, her kind of on and off again friendship with Frederick Douglass. Those are interesting and important aspects. But with this being an election year and the focus on voting, civic engagement, we're going to kind of put a little more emphasis on that now. So to that effect, I'd like to talk for a minute about Susan's illegal vote in 1872. And so this is a story that most people know. If they know anything about Susan B. Anthony, they know that she's on a stamp, she's on a coin, and that she voted illegally, or at least was involved with suffrage in some way. And so it's a really interesting story. Of course, women were not allowed to vote in 1872. It took another nearly 50 years for that vote to become legal. But Susan and 13 other women were able to convince registrars. She approached a register, an individual, I believe his name is Beverly Jones, at a barber shop, and laid into him with a series of arguments about citizenship and about the rights of the U.S. citizen. And she believed herself to be a U.S. citizen, and that was how she was going to work around some of these voting restrictions. And she was able to convince this individual and other registrars. So they did register and did in fact vote in this election. The votes were counted, and when they were counted, they were reviewed, and people found out that these look like women's names. This is not a man. It's going to be a little bit of a problem. And so it became kind of a really big deal, which she was arrested 2 weeks later. And they offered for her to just come down to the station at any time to not make it a big kind of kerfluffle or a big scandal. But she refused. She wanted to be brought to, brought to the jail, brought to the station in the police vehicle. So she went there, and her goal was to really take advantage of the publicity of this and hope to get her case appealed up, potentially even as high as the Supreme Court, to where they could use this as a way to get women's suffrage, similar to today, where we have cases that go up to the Supreme Court and end up enacting laws or influencing legislation. That really wasn't the case for Susan. She got Justice Ward, I believe Ward, where is he? I'll find his name at some point. But she was not granted a favorable, really initial trial. Wasn't really given any time to make kind of strong argumentation. And the judge actually directed the jury to all vote guilty. They didn't even really deliberate. He didn't even ask them what they had voted, because he knew what they were going to vote. Wow. And so this is it did not go really as Susan had wanted it to go. But one of the interesting things that we had learned, kind of, for people know this, they had done the research already, but when we were referring to this case and thinking about Susan's illegal voting, is that the laws that were used to arrest her were actually recently instituted in 1870 and 1871. And those were laws that were put in place to help make more clear the right of Black men to vote in the United States. And so before this, we'd have the 14th and 15th Amendments, which helped grant Black men suffrage. And for still no women, Black or white women, or any people of color, females. And so there were laws instituted to make this, really to stop subjective denial of the vote to Black men by registrars, by people at these tables, people at these situations that would say, I don't care if you have a right to vote, I'm not going to let you vote. And so it was on these laws, which worked positively in that kind of Reconstruction era, at least to some extent, that were also used to stop Susan, or didn't stop her from voting, but to kind of arrest her for voting in that case. By the time she was put in trial, it was June. Later that year, she voted in November. Same day, I believe. I think it's still the same. Same voting day that we have. And she was arrested a couple weeks later, and then eventually was sentenced to pay a fine of $100 and all court costs. And she refused to pay that fine, and it actually remained unpaid throughout the rest of her life and into today. Sorry. So, phone call. One second.
No, go ahead. So, folks, this is a phenomenal interview, I think. I just asked the questions, and then James is a wealth of knowledge. We have to get up there. Let's support Susan B. Anthony. You can get passes at the library, in the Anthony M's and all that. It's an amazing lady. And these are times when we really should look into our history of our champions, and I'm going to call her a champion. Now, you can call her whatever you want, or you can yell at me, but you won't be the first. But she wasn't. Listen to what she's done. She was ready to go to jail for her beliefs. Now, I have some pretty strong beliefs, but I'm not going to go to jail. Well, not for those.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, we hope we would have not. I hope not. The thing that's really most interesting with Susan's case is, obviously voting for the sake of voting. And so she voted for incumbent Ulysses Grant in this election. She was not particularly thrilled with him as a candidate. He wasn't advocating for women's suffrage. She wasn't, doing a lot of the things that she would want to happen, but she still voted. And so I think that's something that think about for people today, is that You know, we're never going to get a perfect candidate. You're never going to get someone that's 100% or even 80% aligned with your own personal beliefs. That's one of the kind of really benefits of the United States, is that people are so unique. People have their own kind of views and values, and they might align with it to some extent with one group or another. But there's never going to be kind of the perfect individual to vote for. And so even just, you know, with that in mind, like thinking about how really how easy it is for us to vote now, especially for women to vote now, especially with certain options, whether that's, you know, mail-in voting and other forms of voting. And you look back at, you know, 1872 and what Susan had to undergo just to vote for someone that she didn't even really like that much. I mean, and she, you know, was arrested, she was imprisoned, she, you know, went on trial. And so this was a, you know, a great deal really of suffering or hardship that she underwent to vote. And we can kind of think about, you know, how really not that long ago this was when kind of this was how difficult it was to kind of get access to that. And even later in life, so as, you know, as Susan, throughout the time between her illegal vote and her trial, she went giving up one of her more famous speeches, "Is it a crime for a U.S. citizen to vote, or citizen of the United States to vote?" Kind of, again, making these strong legal arguments for the right of, for really the case that women are full citizens. They're treated as full citizens. They could be arrested like she was. They can be put on trial like she was. So why can't they not vote? It's very similar argumentation to as was made in the nation's founding, right? And we think about the Declaration of Independence. We think about some of these founding principles. It's that no taxation without representation. So she's making those same arguments. If women can be taxed, imprisoned, have their possessions taken from them by the court and by the law, they should be able to vote for how that law functions.
That's right.
And I think that's the thing, as we fast forward to today, that people really should be thinking about, or at least considering as they decide whether or not to vote, if they're haven't been made this kind of impassioned, you know, they don't feel as passionately about it maybe as Susan did, is that, you know, this is the way to be a U.S. citizen, is to vote. This is the way to kind of exercise your citizenship, exercise your rights, and to influence the way that the country will move. I think people sometimes can get caught up in the idea of these, you know, presidential candidates, and they're not either super thrilled or enthralled or even really even like remotely like some of these individuals, but there's other important things that happen at these elections. And it's not just the presidential. There's down ballot issues, whether that's senators, congressmen and women. There's issues, sometimes ballot questions, and even kind of state and even local issues that come up on these ballots. And that has a much more kind of seen impact in your life in, you know, in Pittsfield and Adams and in North Adams and Stockbridge. These are things that you will feel the effect of that. And there's a regret that people sometimes feel when they, you know, don't vote in an election because they're not thrilled with the presidential options. And then, hey, a lot of other changes happen. And they're, I would have voted against this, right? I didn't like that ballot question, or I don't like how this turned out for, you know, school board or whatever that may be, or for our town selectmen or select group of people. So I think it's an important kind of consideration when we're thinking, you know, should we fill out that mail-in vote ballot, or should we go spend, you know, half an hour at the polls on November 5th?
And you know, interestingly enough, look at what's happening even to today. An American citizen's right to vote, and she hung her hat on that right, so to speak. Well, what's the big argument today? We're trying to find out who's a citizen so they can vote, and who's not a citizen so they can't vote. You probably didn't notice this. I'm an old man, but as much as things remain the same, change, they remain the same. They may have a different twist this way, that way, but what her dedication, her personal commitment, you know, Frederick Douglass, on and off with him. She took up causes that I would say in those days, people would back away from. They wouldn't want to be on Front Street with those.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the, I think that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing that, that is hard to understand when we kind of rewind or think back to history, is just how unpopular Susan's opinions were at the beginning of her career. I mean, she would have fruit and vegetables thrown at her as she marched. Other women would have that as well. There would, people burned effigies. They would burn puppets of her when she would come to town. And then if you kind of fast forward to the end of her life, when she did die in 1906, she was given roses at her birthday. Her birthday of that year, she died a little bit under a month or around a month after her birthday. People laid roses in her lap, and her, you know, funeral was attended by a huge group of supporters, and just a huge, really, swing in public opinion of her over kind of over her lifetime. And she commented on that, like, this is weird. This is strange to me that people are now going to be giving roses to me. And then in press interviews, they'll ask me to put on my famous red scarf because I forgot it. Whereas, you know, earlier in her career, this would not have been the interaction she had with the press,
right,
and with the public. And so you see, and I also think it's important, and not just, and Susan thought it was important to fight for causes that maybe you won't see the completion of. I think that's the thing too, when we're, you know, speaking to young people that visit the museum, or we go to schools, elementary schools and middle schools, is talking about, you know, this, there are causes that might seem too big for you. And, oh, I don't want to get involved with this. I don't want to be engaged with this because I can't make an impact. I'm just, you know, one person. But, you know, it's through these friendships with Elizabeth Cady Stanton that we get huge improvements with kind of temperance and suffrage. Her friendship with Frederick Douglass helped with the fight for abolition and for the rights of Black men in America. They eventually had a split because Susan wanted to get all kind of women, white women, Black women, and Black men to vote at the same time. Frederick Douglass was in favor of a more incrementalist approach. He said, once we get Black men in, they will surely vote in the women. It didn't really work out like that. And so, these are things that didn't happen in her lifetime. When she was, you know, close to her death, she gave a speech, her kind of most famous speech, talking about the next wave of the movement, these women that had been college educated, that weren't as married as young, maybe didn't have as many children to care for, and could campaign like Susan did. She, you know, she said with women kind of such as these, failure is impossible. She saw that it would happen. It still took another 14 years. And so that's kind of a, you know, as an appeal to people now, you know, just, you, it's okay to get involved with things before they're popular, get involved with things at the start. It's not, it's one thing to kind of jump on the 95th to 100% acceptance of something. But if you really believe in something, you can start at 10%. You can start at 15 and grow it to 60. And that's still huge, even if, you know, you don't get to see it yourself. There's a value in that, I think, of doing things, maybe not just for yourself, but for future generations.
Yeah. And like you said, these, what I think we need to focus on, and thank you for coming on the show, is our heroes. Susan B. Anthony is one of our national heroes. Frederick Douglass, one of our now they had a kerfuffle, but they both are our heroes. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, hero. And I don't think we give as much attention to that as we should. And I'm going to ask you again to give the hours and the address of the museum, because they're a little bit different. I kind of like them. So what are the hours
again? Yeah, sure. So just one more time. We're open Thursday through Monday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we're up on East Road, 67 East Road in Adams, Mass. You can get a library pass at a number of libraries locally. Just ask for them at the desk when you're checking out other things. It gets in two adults and two children for free. Those are kind of great opportunities to visit us. We also have we were gifted from the Niagara University professor, Dr. Shannon Risk, who is a kind of more expert on Susan B. Anthony. She gifted us two sets of the National Archives Foundation's Rightfully Hers pop-up display, which tells the story of the 19th Amendment in four panels and then makes an appeal for voting today. And so that display is at the library in Adams. It will be at the library in Williamstown and in Lenox, and also likely the Berkshire Athenaeum in the coming months as we head into the election. So definitely visit us for sure, but also visit your local library to learn more about the 19th Amendment's passing and some of the kind of final trials and tribulations that women after Susan B. Anthony underwent to get the vote.
I think too, as you go to the library, Susan B. Anthony Library, just Google her before you go. And I mean, I try to do that even for this interview, and I didn't have to because James was terrific. What I Googled, I could read from, but he knows it. And I know some of you are going to make a wise remark. No, I did not go to school with Susan B. Anthony. God, these people. I'll get a text like that. Do you know her from high school? No. But again, I know I repeat myself, but I want to make this point. Bring your children. This lady, whether you... And I probably know some people out there saying, yeah, well, I should have never let women vote. But, you know, get over it. She is an American hero. And there's so many learning points from her. Take on a cause if you believe in it. Take on it. Become involved with it early. I mean, James, you have... so well articulated this. It is an amazing, this woman was amazing. I always thought, well, let's face it, she got a stamp, a coin, and a museum, a couple of museums.
Yep.
She didn't sit around and twiddle her thumbs. But, you know, in closing, another thing that you brought out, in that era, and even when I was a kid, there were big families. Some of them had six, seven, nine. I can think of one family, nine kids. So the mom had all she could do to handle the day. And so Susan was always single, always in causes. She took causes that back. You think people would be crazy about you today? Imagine abolition, drinking, and voting. Hello.
Yeah.
You have been a phenomenal guest. And I hope we can get some people up there. Now, I don't want you to call the police or get a restraining order. I think my wife just had knee surgery, so it's going to be a few weeks.
Right.
But we're definitely going to be there. I definitely want to see it. And
sure.
And we'll have you on again. I mean,
absolutely.
You're a wealth of knowledge. And again, we need heroes. I don't want to put down sports figures. They are heroes. But we need other types of heroes that kids can emulate. You know, I mean, I always wanted to be a basketball player. I'm 5'8", so, you know, I didn't go anywhere. But one of my heroes growing up was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Still is. Then I had the good fortune of working in South Africa, and his picture's right there. Nelson Mandela, a real leader. Susan B. Anthony, a leader, a hero, an American hero. James, thank you so much. We'll be in touch. I wish you the very best. You're an excellent guest.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Great to speak with you.
Well, folks, today, I know it bothers you, but a couple things. One, very quickly, this is my flag. A lot of my friends are buried under it. A lot of people who at some point in time signed on the dotted line to give their life for this flag. You don't have to like it. You don't have to. All I'm asking you to do is do not desecrate it. It's a symbol that meant a lot to a lot of us. And if you don't believe me, drive through a cemetery. All those people under that flag, they were ready to give their life for it at one time. Susan B. Anthony, I'm sure, was threatened with some of through her lifetime with some of her stances. God bless, and remember, lift somebody's burden today. We're all in this together. So let's help each other. That's all I'm asking. The world's can be a nasty place. Don't be part of that. Be part of the plus. James, be well, my friend, and stay in touch.
Thank you.
And like I said, don't have Barrett put a restraining order when I come up to that part of the county.
We won't.
All right. Thanks. God bless everybody. Be well.